I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. The news from the Maghreb is that Gaddafi's mercenary forces are closing a siege on Benghazi. Benghazi is the rebel center in the eastern part of Libya. Gaddafi's forces are sloppy, they're slow, but they have firepower. There is no intervention, and the rebels now are reported fleeing key posts. There was a metric earlier today that 1,000 or more had crossed the border into Egypt. It's time to get out. The civil war is over. What have we achieved watching Gaddafi win? Having the President of the United States say repeatedly over these last weeks, it's time for him to leave. We want him to go. France tonight is announcing that the call for the no-fly zone is withdrawn, that it no longer makes any sense. I'm joined now by Pat Lang of Six Semper Tyrannis and Larry Johnson of No Quarter. Both these gentlemen have been with me through this civil war, and it was a very brief one, but it's now the eve before it is over. Pat, I begin with you. Gaddafi closing in on Benghazi, the French call off their push for a no-fly intervention. It seems that the whole contest is over. What have we learned from this, Pat?
Well, it isn't so much what we've learned. It's what the rest of the world has learned about us, I think, that's really relevant. I mean, I watched the French foreign minister today beg on television for some recognition by the rest of the world, and it's pointed us, obviously, that it wouldn't take very much to defend these people who are fighting Gaddafi. And then I watched Bernard-Henri Lévy, the French philosopher who loves the United States, equally beg for some gesture by the United States that would encourage France to continue. And there's nothing there on our part. So we've essentially abandoned these people after the President of the United States declared it to be our policy that Gaddafi should go. I mean, what more pusillanimous kind of example for the world of what we've really become could there have been?
Larry, in your memory at CIA, at State, I can't remember an example from the late 20th century, I wasn't alive in the early 20th century, where a president of the United States has indicated his favoring one side and that side then loses a civil war. I can't remember an instance before, Larry.
Well, maybe the closest was during the first Gulf War when we encouraged the Shias to rise up in southern Iraq.
Oh, then, good example. Larry.
And then we left them to their own devices. But this is, as Pat rightly notes, this is so much worse because it really exposes this, the emptiness of Barack Obama's words in Cairo when he spoke at the university there, and the so-called hope and change and democracy. And they found that there is absolutely no commitment on the part of the United States to anybody in this regard. And this is shameful. This is absolutely shameful.
Pat, we hear noise from Morocco, noise from Algeria. There are continued protests in Algiers that are controlled by the police. Morocco seems to be another story. I don't have a clear picture of it, but the five states of the Maghreb, how will they change after Gaddafi wins this, regardless of the opposition from the EU or from the Arab League?
Well, I mean, as we are implying here, clearly all these people will take into account the fact that they can't count on us for any kind of meaningful support of any sort. And so whatever their rulers, who are varied in that group of people that you mentioned, might do, they know that they're on their own, that they're not going to get any help from us. If you're going to win, you got to do it by yourself.
They're on their own, which means that they will obey the aggressor. Does Gaddafi continue? Does he stand down, or does he continue to bully his neighbors, Pat?
Well, he'll drive. You know, I think he probably has some foreign military advisors of some sort because they've been shown a greater deal of ability to coordinate their rather pitiful forces in the last few days. But he'll go all the way to the Egyptian border, and then after he's got this in hand, he will start to deal with his opponents, and when he can throw the foreign press out of the country. His neighbors have to worry about him, but he's always been a problem.
Larry, Gaddafi wins. Do we welcome him back into the international community? Do we start buying his oil again? Do we allow the Chinese to be the only customer he has?
Well, we'll be buying. We don't buy his oil as much as the Europeans do. The Europeans will be buying. But what this really does, and you touched on it, it opens this area to the Chinese and to the Russians. If they decide to go in and try to wield some influence to imply, to at least communicate to these people that they at least can be trusted to act on their behalf and to support them. What the United States has relied upon some of these countries to play a leading role in going after some of the al-Qaeda groups. And, you know, at this point, their willingness to cooperate with us is going to be in question, because what's in it for them? It's going to become very much, you know, if they can see a direct benefit for them, fine, you know, they may be willing to go along with us. But at this point, this has weakened the United States' influence in this region in a way that we have not seen in 70 years.
I'm speaking to Pat Lang and Larry Johnson. Now we go from North Africa to the Persian Gulf, to the small island state of Bahrain. 1.5 million people. These last weeks you've read on and off press reports of protests in Manama, the capital. This is also the headquarters of the Fifth Fleet. So the United States is very involved in the governance in Bahrain. It's across a causeway from Saudi Arabia. The head of Bahrain is the Al-Khalifa family. King Al-Khalifa is cousin to King Abdullah. And here to just before my conversation with Pat and Larry, I spoke with David Sanger, the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. And what I've learned is that the White House at this point first learned of the National Guard of Saudi Arabia crossing the causeway to Manama to reinforce Al-Khalifa 24 hours ago. They first learned about it from press reports. Pat, is that astonishing to you that relations have broken down from Riyadh and Washington to the point that they have to watch on television 2,000 National Guardsmen flowing into Manama?
I had some information today from someone in the Saudi Ministry of the Interior, which is the police ministry, you know, not the people who do national parks. And I was told, in fact, that the Saudis are fed up with us. In fact, we don't understand that their vital national interests are at stake, and that for them there is a line drawn in the sand here across which they think if the Al-Khalifa family falls, that this mess will spread to the eastern province of Saudi Arabia. So their attitude is in Saudi Arabia that we can either stand by, help them, or just shut up. And our relationship with them has degenerated to that point.
And Pat, is that a new chapter for relations between Riyadh and Washington, or have we been here before and repaired them?
Well, I don't think there's been anything quite like this, you know, since Roosevelt established relationship with the kingdom during World War II. We've had our ups and downs, but this is, we're at a point now at which they've decided that we're just feckless and we cannot be depended on to help with their survival. We should have mixed feelings about that, but I mean, the reality of the thing is that that with regard to Saudi Arabia, we cannot, and the peninsula, we cannot afford to have an Iranian-dominated regime of any kind take power in the Gulf. That's just not possible for us.
Larry, what we have is the image of the Saudi National Guard prepared to confront violently the protesters, and we know that the protesters are capable of triggering that provocation because it would show up in Al Jazeera and it would be useful propaganda throughout the Gulf. At this point, has the White House lost the Gulf, Larry? Or are we short of that yet?
We're on the verge, and let there be no doubt. There were probably several hundred of these Shias killed today in Bahrain. The media reports that there were some, maybe a few killed and hundreds going to the hospital. But, you know, the Saudis weren't shooting to wound. They were going to shoot to kill. And because they understand their survival is at stake here. And this is, you know, we saw that Iran was already making noises that, you know, foreign forces, and referring pointedly to the Saudis, should stay out of Bahrain. So, well, as we talked about last night, this is an undeclared war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. It's the conflict between the Sunnis and the Shias. And Iran is not going to go away quietly. So this is a teapot that's going to be boiling fully for at least the next year or so.
Pat, go ahead.
Larry's right. I mean, this is a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia based on ethno-religious rivalry in the Gulf, and this is a very serious thing for them.
We have this dry line from the Wall Street Journal, the report just put up from their White House correspondent. Officials said, and diplomats said, the Saudis now appear to be charting a largely independent course in response to unrest in Bahrain. Larry, a largely independent course from the United States of America and the Fifth Fleet. Is that credible, Larry?
Boy, you know, that is a gift for, you know, stating the obvious. I mean, the Saudis looked, there is this assumption on the part of the Saudis, and I've seen it throughout that region. They really believe that the United States has a plan that we're not telling them about. And I think what has dawned upon them finally over the course of these last 4 weeks is they realize not only do we not have a plan, we don't have a vision, and we're spectating. And in the midst of all this spectating, Barack Obama's focus is on picking his final four for the NCAA championship. I mean, this is, if this was not so serious and the world interest at stake, I mean, this would be a bit that Saturday Night Live could milk for many laughs, but this is beyond the point of funny now.
Pat, the rest of the Gulf is watching this very carefully. That would be Kuwait. It certainly would include Iraq. We have Oman already. There's been turmoil these last weeks. Where do they go, Pat? If we're gone, who is their protector? Who do they ask to come in and replace us?
Well, Saudi Arabia is the head of the Gulf Cooperation Council, really, and whatever the political form may be. They're all looking to see how firmly they stand up in the interest of Sunni governance in the Gulf. And beyond that, if the United States proves to be as worthless an ally as we seem to be at the moment for them, they're going to look for some other party that might be the French. That's a possibility. It'll be somebody, some external force that they'll look for. But they need to have some sort of sponsor. Yes.
Chinese? Is that credible? Larry?
My money's on the Chinese because they get a significant amount of oil from there. And the Chinese would love to be able to assert themselves in this case as becoming a player where they, in the past that they've been excluded. And it's like the United States has literally ceded the playing field to them. I mean, this is, you know, as Pat pointed out, we don't have any precedent for this since, the days of Franklin Roosevelt.
Pat, if the Saudi National Guard now in place is confronting, this is a surrogate war with Tehran, do they ask the Fifth Fleet to leave?
I think they won't do anything like that until this is settled politically. But after this is over, if we have not proven to be a worthwhile ally, we're occupying a piece of the old British naval headquarters base there on Bahrain. They don't really need us there for anything. We just have some headquarters buildings and a couple of piers and a PX. I think we might well be asked to leave. The Chinese would be difficult for the Saudis because they're communists and there's an ideological problem. But I guess it's conceivable that they would go that way. After all, the Chinese do have the power.
And this started, Pat, is that correct? This started with what is understood the betrayal of the 33-year-long ally of Mubarak. Is that the moment?
Yeah, I think that the fact that that we did not stand by this guy, and he was much reviled on the in all the media as a tyrant and a beast and all that kind of thing. In fact, when it came down to the choice, rather than kill a whole lot of Egyptians, he decided to leave. And that fact of betrayal, I think, has resonated widely. And then the fact that we have not stood by the Libyan rebels after having encouraged these people to revolt, I think, is probably the final icing on the cake.
So we didn't stand by a dictator, and he was forced from power, threatening Saudi Arabia. We didn't stand by rebels, and they're going to be overrun by a dictator in Libya. Pat, there's no rule there. That's chaos.
Yeah, well, you know, as Emerson said, you know, consistency is a virtue of small minds. And in fact, I think the Arabs look at this and they say, well, you know, Egypt is one huge thing and Libya is another small thing. In Libya, the Americans could have observed and honored their own ideals, and we didn't do it. So there's a question of both realpolitik and idealism here.
So, Larry, we've alienated our friends and allies, and we've ensured the victory of our enemy. Is that about it, Larry?
That captures it in a nutshell. And, you know, the law, again, there will come a point in the future where the United States will actually need some of the cooperation of these states, and we're not going to have it at a critical time.
Larry Johnson of No Quarter, Pat Lang keeping Sic Semper Tyrannis. Right now, the Saudi National Guard is supporting its ally, Bahrain. The United States is not consulted. I repeat to you the astonishing fact. The White House, according to my information, did not know that a Saudi National Guard was rolling over the causeway until they saw it in the news. I'm John Batchelor.